Welcome to the Talking Auckland podcast series, where yesterday I was drawing on the valuations and the unitary plan and how some of the more steep increases in valuations were located on the Isthmus and Lower North Shore, where ironically also the most NIMBYism is occurring against the more liberal liberalisation against the unitary plan to allow the freer market to work in supplying the housing typology needed in those areas owing to amenities and proximity to the main city centre itself. And by housing typologies, I mean the ones you would find in the mixed housing, urban and terraced housing and apartment zones, which allow for your three-storey terraced housing developments right up to your six or eight-storey apartments before we start getting into the larger stuff, 18 stories and beyond, inside any city centre or metropolitan zone in those isthmus or lower North Shore areas. But in the same regard, some of the cheaper land out towards West Auckland and Southern Auckland is also ripe for redevelopment as well, for further intensification, both residential and commercial aspects, as the population continues to grow as well. So both the cheaper land and the more expensive land, that both have opportunities there depending which way the developer and the community wants to go. In the upcoming podcast, so the next one after this, I'll be looking, zeroing in on the heavy industrial estates of Penrose to Onehunga, as well as East Tamaki, Highbrook, Wiri, the new one in Drury South, as well as some of the lighter industry complexes such as the airport and its surrounds, and Takanini, where we've just got a new multi-million dollar data center with server capacity of 640,000 equivalent servers just opened up just up the road from where I live. And what I'm going to look at with these industrial estates is how the increase in land prices, which was on the, looks at on average about 17, I think it's between 14 and 17% looking at the valuations, is actually quite hazardous for our heavy industrial complex, and how we need to watch where those land movements are going. And if land does become too expensive, thus the rating component for these heavy industrial complexes becomes too expensive, we've got to watch, because industry will naturally move away from expensive land to cheaper land, which is currently in Southern Auckland and the Waikato. But in this podcast, I'm going to go back over Auckland Council's submission, where Principal Transport Planner Joshua Arbery was up on the stand before the unitary plan hearing panelists and the judges, such as Chairman Judge Kirkpatrick, and how they were looking at the regional policy statement around infrastructure, which tied into the compact city model, the 70-30 brownfield-greenfield development split, and how this had consequences for not only the public transport wing, especially with the City Rail Link getting a boost from NZTA yesterday, the link's in the blog for your reading, but how it also, the compact city model plays up with transport, and how it also, it will lead into the next podcast on how it also affects industry. Now, I'm going to work through in this podcast through the All About Auckland's tweeting timeline on when Mr. Arbery was at the stand, and we'll work through the issues. There might be a bit of muddling here, as the judges weren't quite following a logical sense of order, but I'll try and make best sense as I can as we work through it. Now, Mr. Arbery had told the hearings panel that compact cities have a more efficient energy footprint and less greenhouse gases. That would be true to a limited extent, because everything, it is theorized out that more intensive development is more on an urban footprint is more energy efficient and less greenhouse gases are produced due to less commuting and economies of scale and development, rather than more sprawled out cities that you might see in Australia, here in Auckland as well, and North America. However, that in itself presents limitations, especially towards our industry, our heavy industrial complexes, which Auckland has the largest in New Zealand, as well as it doesn't pick up the fact that, as I alluded to in my last podcast, that Auckland is technically split into three sub-geographical areas that operate rather not independently as well as interdependently of each other, but it gives quite a different dynamic. See, if we were talking about less greenhouse gases, one way to keep those down, especially on the transportation front, is to have an excellent public transport system to allow cross-city travelling, but also having jobs locally so we wouldn't have to go as far, i.e. Henderson, Westgate, Cumu to the Central Business District, Owera to the Central Business District, and Papakura-Pukekohe to the Central Business District. Yes, all of them are connected by public transport, but that's quite long distance commuting one way or the other compared to keeping it local, such as Papakura to Manukau, Henderson to New Lynn, and Owera to Albany or even Takapuna. Now, as I mentioned before, we Southern Auckland provides an enigma to Arberry's methodology and reasoning here, insofar as that if I look at a recent Ministry of Transport commissioned report, which the blog has reported on earlier, while West Auckland, owing to a lack of large job centres, would prove Arberry's fact, and thus they commute towards the Central Business District, and in some cases the Penrose Onehunga Industrial Complex due to a lack of jobs out west, and for the North Shore to a limited extent as well, although they seem to focus more in on Takapuna and the Albany metropolitan centres to help offset that. But with Southern Auckland, as it picked up in the commuting main commuting patterns, Southern Auckland commuted within itself primarily, and by that I mean to Manukau city centre, the airport, Wiri, East Tamaki, and Highbrook, with a limited extent overflowing into the Penrose estate, and of course, as expected, some going up to the Central Business District as well. So in that alone, with South Auckland being quite sprawly, and also having more local jobs available through Manukau and its industrial complexes, despite our PT system not up to scratch yet for our area, its energy footprint, it would contribute to the lesser energy footprint and less greenhouse gases insofar as that everyone, well, the bulk of people in the south are able to work more locally than the other areas of Auckland. So Southern Auckland is in quite an advantage. And it is an advantage that we should be working on to build, especially as Southern Auckland moves from 38% of all of Auckland's total population now to about 45% by the end of the Auckland plan, which is 2042. So that means if we were to keep the proportion per population commuting to the main city centre at the same or even less, i.e. hold the proportion of cross-city commuting or even lessen it for Southern Auckland as she grows, it means the future urban zones have to be utilised not only for residential in South Auckland, but also for industrial and meaningful new job and commercial complexes, as well as making sure our current industrial complexes and Manukau City Centre also develop in proportion as well to keep most of the people working local. And that way you would get Arberry's methodology of the energy footprint being more efficient and less greenhouse gases. Now, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, Arberry did mention the further out you go from using the city centre as a core point, the less chance of getting a job locally. As I said last time, that is true for the west and partially the north, but definitely not true for the south. The judges did pick up on that, I believe, and I think Arberry's picked that up on as well, where the policy settings do allow, in the case of Manukau, it has a situation of employment settings towards jobs, but it isn't out west, so we have a problem. And this is where we get into needing the roading and the public transport system up to scratch, especially for West Auckland. Well, all of Auckland, but in this case, the West, owing to it, has no substantial employment centres, and even in the life of the Auckland plan, it will never will because it just doesn't have the industry or a place like Manukau to support it. Now, Mr. Arberry, yeah, I'm pointing out a lot here, so I'm going through his testimony, said the compact city model would suit the PT model. Well, that's true because that means we don't have to extend the bus and the rail and the roading system out as far to cover more of an urban area. That would be true if the city centre was the sole point, and we're focusing on it as a sole point, which the council can get ahead of itself at times and do. However, Again, Southern Auckland makes that part redundant in the fact that most of the commuters are commuting within itself. So not only do we, yes, we have to focus on public transport radiating out from the central business district, but to keep jobs local, we need to watch our cross-city commuting public transport, but also locally as well to encourage it staying locally. So again, Southern Auckland provides a good example of that. Let's work on it. So in this case, the Manukau South Link, which Auckland Transport keeps stalling over after 4 years of lobbying, it should be built. That way you have direct services from Pukekohe and Papakura into Manukau City Centre, and then you can use your feeder buses to feed out into the Wiri complex, as well as buses and later light rail to feed out to Botany, even Highbrook, and out to Pakuranga. So there's ways of working around it, but the we need to be a little bit more savvy in our planning and move away from monocentric to what we actually truly have at the moment is dual-centric situation with Auckland. Now, Arbery is pressing for the 70-30 split. Yes, that is good for residential, maybe the environment, physical and social and commercial, but it is actually quite poisonous, and I am going to say poisonous, to our heavy industrial complexes in the southern parts of Auckland, as well as Penrose and Onehunga. Yes, allowing more liberal unitary plan zoning and rules would offset the greater intensification, especially within the isthmus and the lower north shore and around Manukau City Centre itself to the north and to the east. However, for industry, and as I'm going to point out in the next podcast more in depth, it needs land values to be cheap to operate. As soon as land becomes expensive to the point of prohibitive, industry, especially heavy industry, will move out and move further away to the fringes. Now, because Arbery is pushing for, and some of the councillors are pushing for the 30%, that fringe land is would be technically chewn up more quickly than the 60-40 split. And especially without the help of the Waikato to set up satellite centres to take the residential pressure off the greenfield land, and thus Auckland loses her could lose her heavy industrial capacity, which Auckland, not only Auckland needs, but the rest of the country needs as well, because this has been a bit cheeky, our industry makes the money, our commercial sector spends it. So if we want income to be earned, we need to make sure our industrial complexes are well supported, and I theorise that the 70-30 split would be quite poisonous to our heavy industrial complexes if we're trying to keep them in Auckland, which is a beta class international city. And yes, large world cities of beta and alpha class still have their heavy industrial complexes to wider extents. Again, maybe not as much as in the 60s, but they still have them today, because of being nearby to main transport hubs, as well as cottoning on and benefiting from the economies of scale of a large city that it can offer. And so that leads into the next part of Arbery's argument, which the judges were going on about road pricing. And I think it was going more beyond the $2 toll that the mayor was advocating for the motorways. I think what the judges were looking at, the panel was looking at, it was a price to enter the city business district to keep the cars down inside that area. Arbery was concerned that ring fencing the central business district off might have a detrimental effect, and to point businesses might move outside the CBD itself to other areas where the congestion, that kind of road pricing might not apply. So that means Takapuna and Manukau would take up more of the slack than what it already is now, which could be could be quite dangerous. But one aspect that was asked, and I'm going into the transport part now, especially with industry, was around the judges have picked up that there's an increase in road freight. Well, that's going to be a given, especially with our industrial complex still technically growing. But as was Arbery pointed out, rail freight is not an alternative for intra-city freight moving within the city itself. So for that, we need to allow to make sure our bus system, our freight system, and our rail system is up to scratch, so that the roads are less congested and more efficient for these intra-freight trucks to move around, rather than getting bunged up as they do now. Rail kicks in for intercity, as well as for as Port of Auckland, Port of Tauranga do, moving their goods from their port sites to a centralized hub site. In case for Tauranga, it's at the Metroport facility in Southdown. From Auckland, they run the shuttle facility between the Wiri Port and Port of Auckland itself, and that keeps trucks off the inner part of the motorway, so that helps as well. So rail has a place. But what it shows, and as I wind this up, is that our council, NZTA, and the government need quite a strong framework for moving other traffic off the road that technically doesn't need to be there to allow the freight to move through, especially if our industrial complexes are going to stay where they are while the rest of Auckland intensifies. Or if an industrial complex moves, which means freight's going to move further, the roading system and the rail system is in such a way that they can get their goods across Auckland, especially in intensified Auckland, rather than a massive sprawling Auckland, which becomes zero-sum to a freight company because it means they've got to commute further their goods. It's going to be all efficient out. In the end, this comes down to the market, both on the supply and demand side, being able to act in the most free and efficient manner to allocate the land as efficient as possible, as viable and as sensible as possible with its residential, industrial, and commercial, and thus our transport must also fit around that as well if we don't want Auckland to back up. And so again, with the unitary plan and looking at the valuations, it needs to be liberalised out. We need to make sure our land use is also incorporated with our transport plan, so the two go hand in hand rather than siloed out as it's current and has been previous over the last 60 years. And so that in the end, no matter if we take the 70-30, 60-40, or even the 50-50 split, along with the satellites in the Waikato, we actually would achieve better results in making sure our energy footprint was lessened, our energy use was more efficient, and our greenhouse gases were lessened. So in the next post, I'm going to look at our industry and how the land values and the unitary plan affect them and what consequences it could have, especially as I said earlier, the 70-30 split could be actually quite poisonous to some of our heavy industrial complexes.